Welcome back. My name is Rabbi Avi Heller, and together we're learning Masechet Moed Katan. We find ourselves on Daf 9a, that's Daf Tet Amud Aleph, and we are about halfway down the page. I'm going to count from the bottom. 2, 4, 6, 8, 10, 12, 14, 16, 18, 20, 22, 23 lines. Sorry, not 23, 21 lines up from the bottom. What we've been discussing is an interesting story. In the time of the first Beit HaMikdash, during the time of King Shlomo, of King Solomon, when King Solomon finished the Beit HaMikdash, he made a big party, and he made a seven-day festival for celebrating the completion of the Beit HaMikdash. And that seven-day festival came immediately before Sukkot, and it was immediately followed by the seven-day festival of Sukkot, and then, of course, by the eighth day of Shmini Atzeret. So they really celebrated like 15 days in a row. But interestingly, the 7 days before Sukkot includes Yom Kippur. So the Gemara says that on that year, when they finished the Beit HaMikdash, the Jewish people did not celebrate Yom Kippur. They did not fast. They actually brought they brought celebratory sacrifices, and they ate and drank and danced and celebrated on Yom Kippur that year. But some of them were a little nervous that if they didn't commemorate the Day of Judgment that year, perhaps Hashem would punish them. And a heavenly voice came out and said, "Kulchem mezumanim l'chayei ha'olam haba." All of you are invited to the life of the world to come. In other words, Hashem agreed or ratified their decision not to commemorate Yom Kippur that year. But the Gemara is bothered by this, meaning, okay, they are invited to the world to come, but how do you know that their sins were forgiven? After all, they didn't confess their sins on Yom Kippur, and they didn't fast on Yom Kippur. How do we know that they were forgiven? And that's the question that is asked here. Uminalan, what is the source? The achiluhu, that he forgave them, that he was mochel their sins. Ditani Tachlifa, we learned Rav Tachlifa learns the following teaching. Bayom HaShmini, this is the next verse. The verse that we learned about the 14-day celebration came from Malachim Aleph, chapter 8, verse 65. This is verse 66, Pasuk Samech Vav. And it says, Bayom HaShmini, on the eighth day, which was the Shmini Atzeret, Shalach et ha'am, he sent out the nation, he sent them home. Now, presumably, by the way, this should refer to the end of the eighth day, because they had to celebrate Shmini Atzeret. So presumably only after they finished celebrating Shmini Atzeret, at the end of the eighth day, he sent them out. Vivarchu et ha-melech, and they blessed the king. Vayelchu le'ohaleihem, and they went back to their tents. Smechim, joyous, v'tovei lev, and of good heart. Al kol ha-tova, for all the goodness, asher aseh Hashem, that Hashem had done, le'David avdo, to David his servant. Now David is not alive, this is already in the time of Shmuel, but to David his servant, uli Yisrael amo, and to Israel his nation. So the Gemara is going to explain each phrase of this verse. So when it says they went back le'ohaleihem, to their tents, it says shehelchu, that they went umatzu, and they found nishehem b'tahara, their wives in purity. In other words, they were able to go home and be intimate with their wives. Now it's interesting, this is the second time in this Masechta that we talked about the idea of ohel, of a private tent, being an intimate space where a husband and wife are together. We saw it also on Daf Zayin Amud Bet, if you look over there. The next line in the pasuk is smechim, joyous, shenehenu miziv hashchina, because they had gotten benefit, they had experienced the radiance of the divine presence. I guess the divine presence was there at the celebration that year of the dedication of the Beit HaMikdash and the Sukkot. V'tovei lev, and of good heart. Shekol echad ve'echad nitabra ishto b'ben zachar. What does a good heart mean? That every one of them that was then intimate with their wives in their tents became pregnant with a male child that year. Okay, so I guess the male child was considered to be the tovei lev. And then al kol ha-tova, the next line in the pasuk says, for all the goodness. What's the goodness? Sheyatzta batkol, that the heavenly voice came out, v'amra lahem, and said to them, kulchem mezumanim l'chayei ha'olam haba, you're all invited to the life of the world to come, even though you didn't do Yom Kippur that year. So that's the goodness. L'david avdo uli Yisrael amo, what does it mean to David his servant and to Israel his nation? Bishlama li Yisrael amo, okay, I understand. It makes sense that it said to Israel his nation, to achiluhu avonim akipurim, that Hashem forgave them the sin of not doing Yom Kippur that year. So the goodness is that he invited them to the world to come. But the Li Yisrael Amo, to his Israel, his nation, is because even though they didn't do Yom Kippur, Hashem forgave them. And that's our question. How do we know that they're forgiven? So here's the source. Based on Al Kol HaTova Asher Asa Li Yisrael Amo, the goodness that you did to your nation Israel, that you forgave them the sin of Yom Kippur. Elo LeDavid Avdo Maihi, but what is the goodness that he did to David? Amar Rav Yehuda, Amar Rav. Rav Yehuda said in the name of Rav, B'shah Shebikesh Shlomo, so he tells another story. When Shlomo, in the moment when Shlomo tried l'hachnis aron l'mikdash, to bring the ark into the mikdash. So as part of the celebration, at the very end, they had to put the ark in its proper place in the Beit HaMikdash. So Shlomo was bringing the holy ark into the Holy of Holies. Davku sharim zelazah. The two gates stuck together and they refused to open to let him pass. So this is kind of a big insult. Here Shlomo is. He built the whole Beit HaMikdash. He's got the ark. All he's got to do is put it in its right place. And the gates refuse to open for him. He doesn't know what he needs to do, what abracadabra he needs to do to get the gates to open for him. Omar Shlomo. So Shlomo tries to get them to open. What he says is, Esrim ve'arba'a rinanot. He sings 24 psalms of praise. And this corresponds, as Rashi says, to the 24 languages of prayer that are found in Mizmor LeDavid, in Tehillim Chav Dalet. So he tries 24 times, 24 different kinds of praise, to try to get the gates to open. Velo na'ana, and he is not answered. They were stuck closed. Patach va'amar, so then at the end of the Mizmor, of Mizmor LeDavid, he says, Se'u she'arim rashechem, right? The gates should open. Lift up your gates. Lift the gates up your head, right? He's talking directly to the gates. Velo na'ana, and they still don't open for him. Kevan she'amar, but when he says, and this is now not from Mizmor Chaf Dalet, this is from Divrei Hayamim, Hashem Elokim, Hashem God, Al Tashev B'nei Mishichecha, don't turn aside the face of your anointed one, Zachra L'chazdei David Avdecha, remember the kindnesses of David your servant. As soon as he invokes his father, Miyad Nana, then the gates open for him. So the goodness that Hashem did for David was that when his son could not find a way to get Hashem to agree to let the Aron into the Beit HaMikdash, only when he invoked his father's name, he allowed him in. Now there is some closure here, because David himself, his greatest dream was to build the Beit HaMikdash in his own lifetime, and Hashem did not allow him to for various reasons. But at least at the time when his son was able to build the Beit HaMikdash, he was only able to complete the process by invoking his father's memory. Be'ota sha'a, at that moment, nehefchu p'nei sonei David, the faces of those who were the enemies of David turned black, kishulei kedera, like the bottom of a pot. So it's like full of ashes and soot. So this is a form of a way of talking about humiliation. All those people that were against David became humiliated at that moment, because they saw that the gates only opened when Shlomo mentioned David's memory. Now this is interesting, because we tend to think that because we love David HaMelech and Shlomo HaMelech, that when they were actual kings and politicians and real people in their time, that everybody must have loved them. But just like politicians today, there were plenty of people that loved them and there were plenty of people that hated them. And David certainly had his detractors. There were certainly people that didn't like him and who thought he was, you know, terrible. And at this moment, when the gates only opened, when Shlomo mentioned his name, they became humiliated, because it became clear that they were wrong and that their criticisms of David were unjust. V'yadu hakol, and then everyone knew, Shemach Aloha Kadosh Baruch Hu al oto avon, that Hashem had forgiven him for his sin. Now, if you remember, we said that Hashem had to forgive the Jewish people for a sin too, that on some level, not doing Yom Kippur that day, that year, was a sin, but Hashem forgave them for it, and presumably forgave them for all their other sins that they did that whole year as well. But also, he did goodness to David by forgiving him for that sin. Now, it does not say here in the Gemara what sin they're talking about. Rashi mentions it. Was it Rashi or someone else? Maybe it was the Rabbeinu Hananel mentions. Yeah, Rabbeinu Hananel says it. But we know which sin we're talking about, either the sin of Bathsheba or of Uriah Hachiti, or both sins. David started to try to marry Bathsheba even before Uriah, her husband, was dead, and sent him out into battle in a way that he would die. And then after he died, he married Bathsheba. So that sin, where David himself admits, Chatati Lashem, that I sinned to Hashem, whatever exactly the sin was, Hashem forgave him for that sin. And the proof that Hashem forgave him for that sin, which is presumably one of the reasons why his detractors felt like he was not ra'ui to be remembered for the good because of that sin, but Hashem forgave him for that sin, as witnessed by the gates opening in his memory. Okay, Rabbi Yonatan ben Asmai, who I have never seen anywhere else in the Gemara, Rabbi Yehuda ben Gerim, and Rabbi Yehuda, who was the son of two converts who converted to Judaism, so that's what he was known as, Tanu Parshat Nedarim, they were learning Parshat Nedarim, they were learning probably the portion of Matot with halachic commentary, Midrash, Bei Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai, in the academy of Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai, if Dermine, and then they took their leave from him. They were going to go home, so they showed respect to their master by saying goodbye to him. Beorta, and that they did that at night. They were heading home. Letzafra, the next morning, Hadur v'kam miftri mine. They came and they took their leave again, meaning they said goodbye twice. Why did they do that? Amar lehu, he said to them, v'lav iftaritu mine beorta, but you already said goodbye last night. Amrule, they said to him, Limatanu Rabbeinu, did not our master teach us? Talmid sheniftar merabo, a student who takes leave of his master, vilan ba'oto ha'ir, and then sleeps in the same city, tzarech liftar mimenu pam acheret, he needs to take leave of him again. So the Marsha says they had planned to go home that night, but in the end they didn't make it out. They missed their plane, or whatever, missed their train, their caravan, and they had to stay overnight. So once they stayed overnight, they went back the next morning to say goodbye again. Shenemar, as it says, and he quotes the verse that we had just quoted, Bayom HaShmini, on the eighth day, Shalach et ha'am, he sent the people away, Vayivarchu et ha'melech, and they blessed the king. What do they bless the king? So they blessed the king on that day, on the eighth day. Uchtiv, and then it's written, Uviyom Esrim Vishlosha, on the 23rd day of the seventh month, so the eighth day was the 22nd day, so now it's on the 23rd day, Shalach et ha'am, he sent the people. So we learn that not only did he send them on the 22nd day, in other words, they said goodbye to him on the 22nd, but they also said goodbye on the 23rd. That's where he learns this from. Elamikan, from here you can learn, L'talmid ha-niftar me-rabo, that a Talmud who takes leave of his master, V'lan ba'ota ha'ir, and sleeps in that same city, Tzarich liftar mimenu pamach, lipater mimenu pamacher, he needs to say goodbye to him another time. It's not directly related to the topic of our Masechta, but since it was from the same verse that we had been learning, we added it in. Now, when Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai saw that they did this, Amar Le Libre, he said to his son, Bnei Adam Halalu, these guys who came to say goodbye the second time, Anashim Shel Tzurahim, they are substantive people. It's not 100% clear what Anashim Shel Tzura means. In different places, it's used in different ways. Here it means they are people of exceptional midot. That's what it sounds like to me. Rashi says that they are Talmidei Chachamim, that they are significant sages, and maybe those go together. In other places, it seems to indicate that Anashim Shel Tzura refers to people's external characteristics, that they are like large or good looking or something like that. But it does not seem to be, that does not seem to be the context here. He seems to say these guys really are serious Jews. So he says to him, Zil Gabehon, go to them, and let them give you a bracha, because they are people that are worthy of giving someone a bracha. Azal, he went, Ashkachinu, and he found them, the Karamu Krai Ahadade, that they were having a learned discussion. And what they were doing is they were picking psukim in Tanakh that seemed to contradict each other and then resolving them. So that's a nice and very sort of sharp kind of learning to do. So we'll just do the first one, and then we'll stop our recording. Ketiv, it's written in Mishle, Pales ma'agal raglecha, measure out the circle of your steps, or the pace of your steps, v'chol derachecha, and all your ways, yikonu, you shall set them properly. Now, the way that they're understanding this is that when you're coming to prioritize your performance of mitzvot, you should, as it says in Pirkei Avot, weigh the reward of a mitzvah versus its loss, which mitzvahs you can do and which mitzvahs you can't do. Sometimes you can't do every mitzvah you want to do, and so you have to make choices. So they're saying here, this pasuk is saying, be careful about which mitzvot you choose to do and which mitzvot you choose not to do. You should prioritize. Uchtiv, but it's written somewhere else, and this is in Mishlei chapter Hey, so the following chapter, it's written, Orach Chaim Pentfales, follow the pathway of life, lest you have to consider, less you have to consider. So in the previous verse it said pales, you should consider, and here it says you should not consider. So the other way of looking at it is that we don't really know what is the matan scharan shel mitzvah. We don't know what the reward for mitzvot are. So you shouldn't necessarily choose which mitzvah you want to do and which mitzvah you want to do. You should do whatever mitzvah comes to you first. Since a light mitzvah might be considered in heaven as much more significant than we think it is, and something that we think is a serious mitzvah might not be considered in heaven as so serious, you should just do whatever mitzvah comes to you. So these are two different ways to approach religiosity. Either be very careful and prioritize, or don't prioritize at all, just do whatever comes your way. So the answer, lo kasha, no, there's no contradiction between the two of them. They refer to two different situations. Ka'an b'mitzvah she'efshar la'asot ayidei acherim. One mitzvah is referring to mitzvah that can be done by others. So you should consider, do I need to do this mitzvah, or can I send a messenger to do it? Can I influence it? So let's say I have to give tzedakah. I don't have to go to the person to give tzedakah. I can send someone with the money to give them tzedakah. In the meantime, I'll do this other mitzvah. So if the mitzvah can be done by others, then you should carefully decide which ones you do personally and which ones you send other people to do, but they both get done. We flip the page to Tet Amud Bet. Ka'an, the other one, is b'mitzvah she'i efshar la'asot ha'yedei acherim. It's a mitzvah that is impossible for others to do. So when it's a situation where you cannot do all of the mitzvot, and you don't really know what the value of each mitzvah is, then you should do the one that comes to you first. Whatever mitzvah comes to you first, you should do. This is interesting. The Rashash in the back brings an interesting hypothetical case in which a person is in jail all year and, let's say, can't do certain mitzvot, and he has an agreement where one day a year he gets let out of jail. Which mitzvot should he do with his freedom? Should he specifically choose the mitzvot that are the most chamurot that he can't do when he's in jail to do, or should he just do whatever mitzvah is the first available mitzvah that he can do? He can choose to eat an apple that he can freely choose and say a bracha. I know, I guess he could say a bracha in jail, but should he do the first mitzvah to come his way, or should he choose the most important mitzvah? It's an interesting thought experiment that even if you solve the two different situations, and so the verses are not contradicting each other, it's still unclear which is the right way to practice our religiosity. Should we do the things that seem most important to us? And even if we're wrong, at least we're making, critical prioritizations. Or should we just yield the fact that we don't really know which things are most important and just do and just prioritize based on precedence? Whatever happens first is what we'll do. An interesting question. We'll stop there and continue in our next recording. Have a wonderful day.